The Royal Commission into Abuse and Care report delay is necessary to get it right. That's according to Associate Professor Stephen Winter from the Politics and International Relations at the Faculty of Arts here at Auckland University. He's an author of a book on financial redress for survivors of abuse in Aotearoa Island, Canada and Australia, and is part of the Royal Commission Forum that brings together academics, non-profit organisations and other stakeholders to promote justice for survivors of historic abuse in our country, and in particular regard to the Royal Commission of Inquiry into Abuse in State Care and in the Care of Faith-Based Institutions. Stephen, thank you for very much for joining us on the program. My name's Dale. Appreciate your time, Stephen. Tēnā koe.
Righto, Dale. Thanks for the great introduction.
Kia ora, man. Well, firstly, Stephen, the report has been delayed, and sometimes it is best to delay to ensure the accuracy of what we are furnishing. So you say it is important to get it right rather than to get it fast.
That's right. I think the this is work that's of immense importance, we've been working towards getting really good results out of this commission for years, and basically they need more time to get it right, so let's take the time and get it right rather than get it quick.
Okay, you've witnessed similar kaupapa in other parts of the world too. When it first came together, and it took a lot of push and shove really for the survivors to get some redress, some attention to their realities, what did you make of the fact that our country was embarking on what was a very ambitious kaupapa across a number of years to try and identify what happened and ensure it doesn't happen again? When you compare it to other inquiries that you're familiar with globally, Stephen?
Sure. Like, New Zealand's a distinct case, right? Like, every other place is distinct. And one of the things that's unique about this commission is the sheer breadth of its scope. So whereas other commissions might focus on particular institutions, or they might look at, say, a particular sort of group of people, this commission is really broad in the sense that it's not focused on any specific institutions, but basically anybody who's been in out-of-home care, and it's over a really long time period. And moreover, they don't focus on, like, say, the Australians did, on a particular form of abuse, but really on anything that could be abuse or neglect. And so this thing has our commission here has the widest scope. And that complexity is part of the story as to why this extension is needed.
It's an inquiry into abuse and care, but some might see it more as delving into the history of racism in our country.
Absolutely, because those two things are intimately connected. And so the out-of-home care is certainly part of Aotearoa's colonial history, and that's represented by the overrepresentation of Māori amongst people who are in care and who are now survivors of care.
Stephen, when you look at the other models you are familiar with, initially it wasn't a kaupapa to look at redress. It was an opportunity for survivors of abuse in state care to air their hara, their grievance, to unload their reality, and sometimes by doing so, the practice in itself is cathartic for them. So we now are looking at aspects of redress and compensation, although that wasn't the overarching intention from the get-go. Where do you think we are at now with this?
Okay. Sorry, just to make sure I understand what you're saying. So originally there was a confidential listening and advice service that absolutely was not focused on financial redress. Financial redress was part of the original terms and conditions for this commission, because we've had here in Aotearoa a series of sort of make-it-up-as-you-go redress programs run by various government bodies and faith-based institutions, and those things have not worked well. We've had massive backlogs, people have been re-traumatized in the process. So it's been core to this commission to make sure to look at those existing programs and to make recommendations that make sure that we do things better in the future.
Can we touch on this re-traumatized kaupapa also, unless there's a positive outcome? I mean, many would assume just by speaking the truth and airing it publicly, it's helping to resolve inner turmoil, but that might not be the case. What would you say of the re-traumatization of some survivors?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. The sort of, you know, sort of the idea that, you know, talking will make it better became really popular sort of in the 1990s with reflections on sort of the South African Truth and Reconciliation Commission. But I think what we've learned over time is things aren't that simple. And whereas, you know, working with a trained psychologist or psychiatrist in an appropriate setting absolutely can help people, you know, manage some, you know, difficulties, doing so in the much different forums of, you know, sort of a Royal Commission of Public Inquiry can actually be profoundly re-traumatizing. And though one of the things that over the past 8 years that these commissions have done is work towards a better COPAPA to help, you know, there's no way to be perfect in these spaces. There's no way to avoid doing some harm, I think. But it is the case that, you know, the people are more aware of the danger of what they're doing and taking mitigating steps. And so, in say for this commission, you know, survivors wouldn't be put on the stand, as it were, you know, like they were in South Africa, and asked to talk about their situations in public. Instead, people are working through a much more, most survivors are going through a more you know, sort of intimate private sessions, working with a commissioner or, you know, and working with appropriate support.
You are familiar with similar COPAPA in your home country of Canada. For those of you at home, Stephen grew up in Vancouver. And I just wonder, are there some similarities in this type of approach, whether similar situations occurred in Canada? I'm led to believe not too dissimilar. Can you share some observations about the process utilised in Canada, Ireland, and even Oz, in comparison to what you've witnessed here in Aotearoa, Stephen?
Sure, no worries. So, there's so many similarities and so many differences. So let's talk about, say, in Canada, there was a Truth and Reconciliation Commission that kind of worked as a commission of inquiry, but the Canada's Truth and Reconciliation Commission was really foremost about Indigenous peoples in Canada sort of working mostly within them, you know, within themselves, but also with representatives from government, representatives from government ministries, representatives from faith-based organizations to sort of work through the trauma of the genocide that was inflicted by the residential schools. Here in New Zealand, the process has been quite different. It's, you know, this is not a Truth and Reconciliation Commission. This is a Royal Commission of Inquiry and governed by different rules. And so while the Royal Commission here is definitely learning from the Canadian process, borrowing from some of its mechanisms, it has a, you know, a slightly different, more, I would say, more formal structure.
And where are we now? Timelines as well. We started our discussion talking about a delay in releasing the findings of the Royal Commission of Inquiry. You say that that is appropriate. What are we looking towards now? When might this be forthcoming? And while the delay is sensible from your assessment, Stephen, what can we expect going forward now?
Well, the commission's now required to submit by, I think it's March 2024. But I would expect the commission to be coming forward with, you know, there's going to be a report into the Maryland's school down south over the next couple of months that should be out. There should be other research that's published, I would hope. And then those the report with its recommendations. And in between now and March, I would hope to see the Royal Commission starting to socialize those recommendations, you know, getting ideas out into the public sphere where people can start to talk about and understand the implications of the recommendations when they come, so that when they come, in, you know, institutions, government are in a position to start moving quickly on implementation.
Thanks, Stephen. What are you working on at Varsity? I appreciate your commentary in this sort of frame, but what's keeping you busy? What?
Oh, man. I got so many students. I spend my time teaching. Now, like, most recently, I guess, myself and a colleague, Martin Wilkinson, have just drafted a paper on some of the things that we've seen in redress programs that stop survivors from fully enjoying the benefits of the money that they might be otherwise getting. And so we're concerned and we're writing about ensuring that survivors have full autonomy over money that they're entitled to, you know, by virtue of the fact that they're getting compensation for injuries. And so that's something that's really important to me, is making sure that survivors are in the best possible position going forward from, you know, position, working with programs of redress.
Nice meeting you, Stephen. Thanks very much. I hope we can talk again and you can share some more of your expertise with our peeps. Appreciate your thoughts today, Ewa.
Thanks a lot, Al. It's been great talking to you.
Yeah, you too, mate. Thank you. That's Associate Professor Stephen Winter, Politics and International Relations at the Faculty of Arts, Auckland University. Thanks to him, and sharing some observations.